But we are in lesson four, water from a rock. What was our lesson last week? This book has the theme of water. And what was the story about water last week?
Through the Red Sea.
Through the Red Sea. Okay. And so we saw the children of Israel going through the Red Sea. They went through the Red Sea on dry land. God parted the waters, caused the waters to open up. The Egyptian army had come up behind them. God protected them and kept the Egyptian army away. The people all took it in stride, didn't they? They just trusted in God the whole time.
No,
they didn't. Look at 14:11. Look at 14:11, just a little review. What did the people say? We won't read it out loud. Read it with your own eyes. As Pharaoh and his army got close, how did the people of Israel react?
There were no graves in Egypt.
Yeah, there are no graves in Egypt? Isn't there a place to bury us in Egypt? Did you bring us out here? Has you taken us away to die in the wilderness? And so, of course, we'll see this skeptical, unbelieving attitude in their hearts over and over again as we go through our lesson today and as the children of Israel make their way through the land of Egypt. But God did provide for them. God did protect them. He did deliver them from the Egyptians, from the Egyptian army. He did open up the Red Sea, and they walked through on dry land, and then he closed the Red Sea upon the Egyptian army. And I believe Brother Brent made reference to chapter 15 last week and the song of Israel as they praised God for their deliverance. Moses had said, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Just wait on God's deliverance. And God did deliver, didn't he? In a mighty, powerful way, God delivered. And so the people sang a song of praise. And then at the end of chapter 15, we see the murmuring continues. And so at the end of chapter 3, it says they went to the wilderness of Shur. This is in verses 22 through 27 at the very end of the chapter. They had been delivered, and the horses of Pharaoh and his chariots were cast into the sea, and the children of Israel had sung this wonderful song of praise to God. And Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Moses, took timbrels, verse 20, in hand, and all the women went out with her with timbrels and with dances and sang a song of praise to God. But they traveled for 3 days. In verses 22 through 27, at the end of 3 days, there was no water. And they came to a place, and they called it Marah, which means bitter waters. And the people murmured. Look at verse 24. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And they cried unto Jehovah, and Jehovah showed him a tree. What did God... I know this was not part of our lesson this morning, but you may remember from previous studies, what did God have him do with that tree?
Throw it in the water.
Throw it in the water. And so he showed him a tree, and he cast it into the water, and the waters were made sweet. And so God again provided for them. Look at verse 26. He says, "If you hearken, diligently hearken to the voice of Jehovah thy God, and will do what is right in his eyes, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases upon thee which I put upon the Egyptians, for I am Jehovah that healeth thee." And so there have been different views of these verses, this particular promise. Was it a spiritual promise? Was he talking about spiritual blessings? Or was he talking about literal physical blessings upon the nation if they would listen? And I take it as, in essence, both. I guess that's the chicken's way out. You just say it's both. But I think a good case can be made that if they would listen to God, if they would obey his instructions, God's law was a spiritual law for his people, but it was also a physical law for his people. It included many instructions and guidances for them, for their physical lives. It as we read through the law, we see that many of the things that he wrote about had we know later, he did not give them all this information. They didn't need to know the information. But God gave, what the law God gave them was a good sanitary law. It was a law that would keep disease away if they would listen to him. Other nations did not practice some of the things that God had told them to practice. The uncleanness of dead bodies and the burial of their... what's the word I'm looking for? You understand. Their refuse and all of those things. The washing of pots. And as you read through the law of Moses, it was a very healthy law. It did things that would help them to avoid physical disease if they would listen to it. And so God's promises were upon them. God's promise to bless them. God's promise to take care of them. That none of these diseases would be upon them. It's God that healeth thee. So that's the end of chapter 15. At the end of 15, they come to Elam. And again, this is not part of the lesson, but just very quickly, just to touch on 16, to lead us up to 17, to where we are today, just to kind of fill in so you'll understand the flow of what's going on. In chapter 16, we see that they murmur again. Someone read verses 1 through 3 of chapter 16. Mary, would you read that for me?
Sure. And they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai. And on the 15th day of the second month, after their departing out of the land of Egypt, the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we did die by the hand of the Lord at the land in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and we did eat bread to the full, for ye have brought us forth unto this wilderness to kill this whole assembly to the company.
Okay, so this is the third time now they've murmured. Maybe more than that, but I think the count is three. They brought them, God began to deliver them, and they brought them up to the Red Sea, and they were afraid the Egyptians were going to catch up to them, and so they murmured and complained bitterly about, you brought us out here to die, and aren't there enough for the graves in Egypt? And so he opens the Red Sea for them, and they walk through on dry land, and you would think that one act alone, that one miraculous act alone, would communicate to them. From our lesson last week, what should the opening of the Red Sea and the deliverance of Israel, what should that have communicated to Israel?
Faith in
God.
Power of God.
God's
going to take care of us.
God's going to take care of us. God's going to provide. Is God going to provide? Yeah, God's going to provide. Can we trust him?
Yes.
Does he have the power to provide?
Yes.
Absolutely. Anyone that can open the waters of the Red Sea and walk through on dry land, he's got the power. He loves them. He cares for them. He's promised he will do this. And so they get 3 days hungry, and what do? Three days journey, and they don't have. I don't know what the bitter water was. I don't know if it was bitter in the sense, I didn't really study that in depth before this. It was just kind of in passing. But you had the bitter water. Did it just not taste good? Was it unhealthy? I don't know. But it was bitter water, it says, and he healed it. God provides. God takes care of it. Well, they come a little bit further, and they get hungry a little bit. Maybe they were hungry a lot. I don't know. But they begin to complain and murmur again. In verse 3, would that we had died by the hand of Jehovah in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots, when we did eat bread to the full. We were working, working, working. We were... Of course, what were they saying back then? What were they saying in Egypt when they were working and had all this food?
They were complaining of being in slavery.
Yeah, they were in slavery. They were in bitter slavery, and they were complaining then. It sounds like a child, you know. A child, no matter what you do, the child's going to be unhappy.
That's right.
You know, it's like the child that... Oh, anyway, we won't go into it. But the child complained, no matter what you try to do, the child's going to complain. Okay? Well, what did God do here in chapter 16 to give them food? He provided manna and quail. And so it's the beginning of the miraculous provision that God makes for his people with the manna and with the quail. And so we won't go into all that in detail, but we see all those instructions in chapter 16. And you may remember, it says in the evening, verse 13, the quail was delivered to them, came to them. Verse 15 talks about the manna, the instructions about the manna. Each was to take one omer full per head, per person. They're not to leave any until the morning. Of course, once again, they didn't listen, did they?
No.
Some of them tried to leave it to the next day. And what happened to the manna that they tried to leave over to the next day?
Worms.
It had worms in it. It was rotted. And so they wouldn't listen. And on the sixth day, they were told to do what?
Gather twice.
On the sixth day, they were told to gather twice as much. Well, I thought he said if it was left over to the next day, it would spoil and be bad. God took care of that too, didn't he? Okay, so if you tried to leave it over to the next day on days 1 through 5, that wouldn't work because God said don't do that. But on the sixth day, you have faith and you get twice as much. And lo and behold, on the seventh day, the morning comes, it's still good and fresh. No problem with it. But some people didn't believe him about that, did they?
Right.
So what did they do?
They went to gather some and wouldn't any.
Yeah, they decided we're not going to gather any because last time I tried to gather too much, you know, it's just rebellion over and over again. And so they go out the next morning and there's nothing there. It's the Sabbath, there's nothing there. So that's chapter 16 with the quail and the manna and God providing. Now let's go to 17. And so that's our lesson today as we think about water. And let's read verses 1 through 7. Verses 1 through 7 is the first passage in our lesson where God provides water. And who would like to read? Bonnie?
All the congregation of the children of Israel traveled from the wilderness of Sin, starting according to Yahweh's command, and encamped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test Yahweh?" The people were thirsty for water there, so the people murmured against Moses and said, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us, our children, and our livestock with thirst?" Moses cried to Yahweh, saying, "What shall I do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." Yahweh said to Moses, "Walk on before the people, and take the elders with you, and take the rod in your hand with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock of Horeb. You shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink." Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He called on the name of the place Massah and Meribah, because the children of Israel quarreled, and because they tested Yahweh, saying, "Is Yahweh among us or not?"
Okay. Go to your lesson book, page 17, Water from the Rock, and we'll just kind of walk through the questions. I think it'll take us through the discussion of the things that we want to talk about. And so here in chapter 17, in what place, question number one, in what place did God's people resume their grumbling against Moses and God?
Rephidim
was the name of the place, verse 1. Number 2. What was the cause of their grumbling? How do you account for their behavior given the care that they had already received from God? So what is the cause of the grumbling?
No water.
No water. And so they grumbled about bitter water. First they grumbled because they thought God was going to allow the Egyptians to come and overtake them after God had already delivered them from the Egyptians. So they didn't trust him in that account. Then the bitter water, they didn't like the bitter water. And then, so God sweetened the bitter water. And then they grumbled because they got a little hungry. And so now their bellies are full. And now they're grumbling because they don't get water as quick as they want it. And so it says they strove with Moses. What are some of your versions besides the old American, my old American Standard, says they strove with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And so what are some of your versions?
Quarrel.
Contended. Pardon me?
Contended.
What else? Anything else?
Tried.
Okay. And so it's the idea of striving, of quarreling. Holman, the Holman Christian Standard Version says complained. But it was, you know, there's complaining and then there's complaining. Right? There's murmuring and then there's murmuring. And apparently this word brings out the idea this was an angry confrontation. This was not just a, you know, we're a little hungry or we're a little thirsty. This is, you know, the mob. This is bordering on mob rule. This is people standing out in front of, as we see in some of our pictures today, in front of an embassy with signs and with screaming and yelling and off with their heads kind of mentality. And Moses, what does Moses say to God?
He said they were about to stone me.
Verse 4, and Moses cried to Jehovah saying, what shall I do unto this people? They are ready to stone me. They were ready to revolt. And so this wasn't just a mild complaining, and Moses was not exaggerating. I don't think he was exaggerating at all. And so they strove with him, give us water to drink, verse 2. And Moses said to them, why strive ye with me? And then he says something else after that. After saying, why do you strive with me? What does he say?
Why do you test the Lord?
Why do you test the Lord? Why do you test the Lord? And not to get ahead too much, but that's really the issue here, isn't it? They're striving against God. They're not trusting in God. Skip all the way down to verse 7. Verse 7. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah. What do Massah and Meribah mean? Maybe your footnote has a different word there.
Contention. Testing and quarreling.
Yeah, tempting or testing, and Meribah, chiding or strife or quarreling. Because they tempted Jehovah saying, what? Is the Lord among us or not? Is the Lord among us or not? Now that's interesting.
It's like they want him to prove him. They want God to prove himself.
Okay, they want God to prove himself.
He already has.
How many times does he have to prove himself? How many times does he have to demonstrate that he has the power?
Every time they want something. It's just like a kid that has that instant gratification.
Yeah.
And maybe every time he gives in, and then they know that maybe he'll give in. They seem like it, sort of.
Yeah, maybe that's right. That's right.
Just having the pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke
wasn't
enough.
Yeah.
They could see that every day.
Yeah, yeah. In the first place, when they looked out now that the manna has started, when they looked outside every morning, what did they see?
Quail.
They saw manna every morning.
And
apparently quail was not a daily thing, but the manna was a daily thing. Every morning there's manna on the ground. What does that tell them?
God's
with them. God's taking care of them. As Steve just said, every day if they just look outside, what else do they see? They've got the pillar of fire by night and the cloud by day that they can look and see God is among them. Now, think a little bit more about this. What do you think is? I've heard two or three explanations of what Israel means here in verse 7 when they're saying, "Is God among us or not?" Are they saying, "Does God exist?" Do you think they were doubting God's existence?
Maybe they feel like
I don't think so. I don't think they're doubting his existence. Are they really doubting his? Are they doubting his power? Some say they know he exists, but they're. Do they doubt his power?
I think
he's displayed that over and over again. I don't know that they're doubting his power. I think, and this is just one man's opinion, I couldn't prove it, I think they're asking, does God really care about us? Does God really care about us? Now, that should have also been answered.
That's right.
But I think it may be down to that kind of level where they're every time something happens, it's, again, we use illustration of a kid. Every time something happens, a kid, you don't really love me.
And he gives in.
You don't
they,
really love
they
me.
They might be using that to their advantage, they think, maybe.
Well, maybe they're... Now, God does give in. God does bless them. Is that because he's like an overindulgent parent that's just giving in to his children?
No, he loves them.
Maybe he's trying to build their faith.
Really. He's trying to build their faith. Yeah. And he's providing.
Yeah.
We kind of get the same answer later, or the same questions sometimes have been asked about when Moses strikes the rock in the second story instead of speaking to the rock. Mm-hmm. And some people say, why did God gave him the water? But Moses disobeyed. Does that mean we can disobey God and he still blesses us? Why did God give him the water when Moses disobeyed? I think the answer is the same. That God's going to provide for his people. Mm-hmm. Even though the individual, even though the messenger disobeyed, God still knew his people needed water, and God provided for them even though the individual disobeyed. He blessed the multitude of the people even while one man tripped and fell. And so God's going to provide, and God's going to provide for his people. And whether grumbling or not, God was going to provide for them. Now, he punished some of them individually, didn't he? What did God say about this group of grumbling, complaining people? I mean, how many of them got to the promised land?
Two
out of the whole 660,000 men that came out of Egypt. Only two got to the promised land. Why? Because they were a bunch of grumbling, complaining, unbelieving people, I think. And, of course, the specific incident was the one that happened later when they didn't believe the spies. But in general speaking, this was a nation that just didn't really trust God.
But we're taught that godliness with contentment is great.
Yes.
They could not be content.
They couldn't be content. Godliness, that's a great passage in the New Testament, 1 Timothy 6, I believe. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We brought nothing into the world, and we're not going to carry anything out. Mary?
I think I just get really frustrated reading this story because they don't pray to God. They don't thank him for what he gives them. They're just constantly wanting more.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I find it very, very interesting, too. Now, is it partly because they started, I mean, when they were in Egypt, they started worshiping some of the other gods, and, you know, that they just lost that faith or belief in the one God, or what, that they should test him so many times over and over again?
Yeah, I don't know the answer. It just seems a no-brainer, doesn't it, mm-hmm. that after all he had done, their minds would be completely convinced that this is the true and living God. He's just defeated all of the gods of the Egyptians and delivered us from Egypt and the worshiping of all their gods. And he's brought us out here, and every time something seems to go wrong, he corrects it, and he's, you know, maybe he's testing us a little bit. You would think, and there may have been some among them. There may have been a few among them anyway that were thinking that way. Probably the women. The women were probably more spiritually focused and insightful than the men. That's always seemed to be the case. Not you men, because you're here today and you care and you love the Lord. But as a general speaking. But anyway, I won't go into that. It seems like 9 out of 10 or 19 out of 20 people we baptize in China are women. There seems to be a more tender heart, spiritual focus. But anyway, that's another subject. Yes, sir?
I'd like to look at the other side of this for just a minute.
Okay.
How long would you wait if you were hungry before you started complaining?
Right. It's a lesson for us, isn't it?
Sometimes I complain of suppers an hour late.
Does he do that, Carolyn? No, he doesn't.
If it was 3 days late, or if I hadn't had anything to drink for 3 days,
yeah.
I think it's an indication that a lot of our prayers answer is wait.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good point. And as Brother Darrell says, to bring the lesson to us, it's easy to criticize them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy to read this and criticize them. What about us?
Okay.
Are we the same way?
My thought was that if they had trusted in the Lord, they wouldn't have gotten thirsty or hungry.
Yeah. That may be
because
true.
Because their clothes never wore out during all the 40 years they wandered around.
Yeah.
So they weren't trusting the Lord to take care of them.
Yeah.
So they got hungry and thirsty.
Yeah, yeah. And so because of, that's an interesting thought. Maybe, of course, the Lord is testing them here, but maybe if they had shown the kind of faith they should have, the Lord would have taken care of them sooner, knowing that they trusted him.
Right.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we never know because it didn't happen. But it's an interesting thought. I saw another hand out of the corner of my eye. Maybe someone's scratching their head. I don't know. Okay? Well, let's go to the next story. Well, we didn't get through all the questions. Quickly through the questions. Number 3. When the Israelites quarreled with Moses, with whom were they really quarreling?
God.
If we quarrel with our spiritual leaders today, are we doing the same thing as Israel? Explain. We're going to skip that one. That's too much explanation. I would answer yes and no is my answer. If we're quarreling against our spiritual leaders, the elders, because they're trying to stand for the truth, we're quarreling with God. But our spiritual leaders are not perfect men, and they may make mistakes in their judgment as well, and when they do, we have a right to talk to them about that. Now, we should not quarrel, we should not be strifeful, but they are just humans, and if they make a judgment mistake, we think, then we have a right to talk with them about that. And so that would kind of be my answer. Number 4, Darrell, is that a fair answer?
Yeah, I had a comment similar to that.
Yeah. Okay. I asked him because he is a shepherd in the flock up in Conway, that's where you're from, Conway. And so he has to deal with this sometimes. Go ahead.
Conditions were a lot different than Moses.
Yeah. Good. What attitude was expressed, next page, number 4, what attitude was expressed by the Israelites in their grumbling? What attitude did Moses express regarding them in their grumbling?
A lack of trust in God.
Okay.
Self-centered.
Pardon me?
Self-centered.
Okay, okay. And that was where we said Moses said they're ready to stone me. Number 5, what instructions did God give to Moses? I picked out 3. It seemed to be a three-step process. Becky, what was it?
I put, go before the people with some of the elders, take your rod, strike the rock.
Okay, go before the people with the elders, take the rod, strike the rock. Number 6, what did Moses name the place of this grumbling? What do the names mean? We talked about that, Massa and Meribah, tempting, provoking, chiding, strife. Did the Israelites sin in their behavior? Did the Israelites sin in the behavior they exhibited? If so, what was their sin? And how might we be guilty of such today?
Well, they were questioning God or testing God.
Okay.
And I kind of thought of, for today, maybe sometimes when we say, when we pray, we say, well, if you do this for me, God, then I'll do such and such.
Yeah. Yeah, our prayers shouldn't come with conditions, should they?
Yeah, they weren't content either, really.
No, they weren't content.
Yeah.
They didn't trust.
Yeah.
They didn't trust. And number 8, how does the grumbling indicated here compare with the grumbling at Massa and Mir? Oh, that's another next passage. Okay, chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. And so here is the mirror story. And this one takes place many years later. It takes place not long before they go into the Promised Land. This is, I didn't look it up exactly, I should have, but within just the last year or so of their 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And so when we come to Numbers chapter 20, and let's read 2 through 9. Do I have a volunteer? Casey, would you read 2 through 9 for me?
Sure. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink. So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he commanded him.
Okay, let's stop there for a moment. And so what's the similarities here between the first incident and this incident? Are there similarities?
Yeah,
no water is a similarity.
Complaining
is a similarity. They, again, failed to trust in God, even though he had shown his power over and over and over again, as we've already said. Now it's been almost 40 years. They're in the 38th or 39th year. Every day, manna is provided. God has provided quail and meat. God has provided victory over their enemies. And so we see God's provisions for them, and yet still we come near to the end and they still complain. And the kind of the statement of their complaint is similar, isn't it? They had said before about, you know, at least we had the flesh pots, at least we had plenty to eat. Here in verse 5 it says, there's no place of seed or grain, I think Casey's version said, or of figs or vines or pomegranates. Oh boy, we miss those pomegranates. They're so mistreated. And so what does Moses and Aaron do? They go to the Lord. That's one thing we haven't talked about. But Moses and the other, he went to the Lord. He talked to the Lord about it. And there's a lesson there for us, isn't it? And we have, when we have challenges in our lives, we should go to the Lord in prayer. He listens. He cares. He understands. And so they went to the door of the tent of the meeting and fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And God gives him instructions now. And again, what's these instructions? Similar, this is another similarity, but a difference. A similarity, but a difference. Speak to the rock is the difference, isn't it? What's the similarity?
Make assembly together.
Okay, take the rod and assemble the congregation, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak unto the rock before their eyes. And it will give forth its water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water. One thing we haven't talked about, this was not a trickle of water, was it?
No.
A trickle of water would have taken forever. Can you imagine a trickle of water giving water to millions of people? As Brother Brent talked about, I don't remember his illustration, but the number of gallons, the number of boxcars or whatever it was that he illustrated, how much water it would take to take care of this many people. This was a huge number of people. Undoubtedly, the water flowed like a gushing. What is the psalm that was referenced in the lesson? Psalm 78, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, 78, verses 15 through 18.
What is the verses that he referenced there? Okay, verse 16, I believe it is. Here in Psalm 78 is a psalm of Asaph, and he talks about some of the things that happened in the wilderness, and of course their failings as well. And verse 15 says, He clave rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink abundantly out of the depths. and brought streams also out of the rock and caused waters to run down like what?
Rivers.
Like rivers. And so God caused rivers to flow before them. Okay, so those are the similarities and differences. Now let's read 10 through 13. 10 through 13. Who would like to read for us? Lana, would you read for me?
And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, Because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them.
Okay, so he uses the same word to title this place. This is not the same place on the map geographically, but he names both of them Meribah because there was striving at both places. And so Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together, and he says what? What was Moses, God told Moses to do what?
Speak.
He called him to speak to the rock this time. Mm-hmm. He had told him the first time to
strike
the rock. This time he says speak to the rock. So what does Moses do? Well, I guess it worked the first time. It'll work the second time. I'll just strike it. Now, that was disobedience, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was disobedience to God. Clear disobedience. He did not do what God said. But was that the only thing here? No. Why do you say that, Daryl? Daryl shakes his head no. Okay. Look carefully at that in verse 10. Thank you. Hear now, ye rebels, shall we bring forth water out of this rock? What did God say about that later in the same context? Why did God condemn Moses? He was disobedient, but it was more than that.
He didn't sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel.
Okay, so verse 12, because ye believed me not. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. How could he say that about Moses? How could he say that about Moses? Moses had done everything that God said. Moses believed in God. How could God say here, because ye believed me not?
Because he basically left him out of it.
In this instance, he didn't believe it.
Yeah.
It's a difference between a life of faith and a particular action. His life had been a life of faith, hadn't it? And the writer of the New Testament makes it very clear in Hebrews chapter 11, by faith Moses, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Moses was a man of faith. But in this case, his faith failed.
Right.
In this case, he says, you believe me not. To do what?
Speak to the rock.
To honor him before the, honor God before the people.
Yeah, go ahead, Daryl, had a hand.
I think as Moses was to make this happen, it should have been clearly evident that God was providing.
Yes.
And he didn't make it clearly evident either. Maybe did it without thinking, but I don't know.
That's right.
That's what the problem was.
Yeah, he didn't sanctify. What's the word sanctify mean?
Set apart.
You didn't sanctify me in the eyes of the people. You didn't set me apart in the eyes of the people. Who deserved the credit?
God.
Who was the only one that deserved credit?
God
did. And so he says, shall we? And I've wondered about this with Moses. It may have just been a reaction of frustration. Do you think he could have been frustrated with the people? And angry at the people? With a righteous anger? It's a righteous anger. They have shown disobedience and rebellion and disbelief over and over and over again. And he is frustrated. He's at the end of his rope, we might say.
They're blaming Moses.
And they're blaming Moses. And so he says, do we have to do this again? And God says, you went too far. You didn't. Now, did this mean Moses was going to lose his soul?
No.
It's an example to us. One mistake doesn't cause you to lose your soul if you repent of it, and clearly Moses did and was sorry about it, because we know he didn't. How do we know Moses didn't lose his soul?
Because of Hebrews comes by, the Hall of Fame of the people that were on it.
Okay, the Hall of Fame of the people in Hebrews 11. Another thing would tell us he didn't lose his soul.
Mount of Transfiguration.
Who was standing there on the Mount of Transfiguration?
Moses was one.
God didn't bring him out of hell to bring him up there, did he?
No.
And so, but the point is, he didn't sanctify and set apart God. God deserved the glory. And of course, the warning is for us. We need to be mindful of this. There's a lot of warnings here. The warning of don't let your anger and frustration get ahead of you, and don't blame God for things that God is not to be blamed for. And so a lot of good lessons here as we think about Moses and his mistake and God and his reaction to it. Now, I had a hand or two. Philip?
I think it's just like we get sometimes that we get frustrated or something and we leave God out of it. We do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Do things on our own. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Let us out, my opinion kind of, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good thought. Good thought. Okay, I'm almost out of time. We didn't get to 1 Corinthians. Look to 1 Corinthians quickly. Do I have 30 seconds? What does Paul say in 1 Corinthians 10? If I can find it, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1, For I would not, brethren, have you ignorant that our fathers, and we talked about this passage last week, didn't we?
Right.
Our fathers who were under the cloud and passed through the sea and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual food and did drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Interesting passage when we think about all this. What is spiritual food? Was it not real food? Was it just kind of pretend food? What is spiritual food?
Provided by God.
I think it's spiritual in the sense of its source. It's provided by God. The bread was provided by God. The water was provided by God. And we all drank of the same rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Was Christ literally a rock following them in the wilderness? The rabbis taught that, not that it was Christ, but there was an old fable among the Jewish rabbis that after this first incident of the rock was not just a cleft in the mountain, but the rock was a big boulder, and this rock followed them everywhere, providing water. Is that what happened? Was there a rock following them around? No, that was not what happened. No indication of that. And that's not what Paul was. Now, some have looked at this statement by Paul and said, look, Paul was believing a Jewish fable and included that in his writings. No, that's not what Paul's doing. What does he mean the rock was Christ? Again, it's a spiritual providing. Who provided this for Israel? God did. Is Jesus a part of the Godhead? Yes. Paul's making a comparison for them. Paul's making a comparison for them. And Paul is teaching the Corinthian brethren, just as God, was there two bells?
No.
Just the one. Okay. I didn't want to make sure I wasn't holding you too long. God provided for them in the Old Testament, and God provides for us. And they murmured, and we have to be taught. That's his whole purpose here in 1 Corinthians 10, teaching us not to murmur as they murmured, and not be disobedient as they were disobedient. And just as God provided for them, does he provide for us?
Yes.
Absolutely. And so the passage there in 1 Corinthians is a great one. Be faithful. Take heed lest you fall. Don't murmur as they murmur. God is the provider of all spiritual blessings. Okay. Well, if the bell didn't ring, it should have, according to my watch. But anyway... Any questions? Who wants the last word?
I have a question.
Bonnie.
You won't have an answer, but So after they left where the rock, the two times that the rock sent forth water, so once they left and continued on their way, did the rock stop providing water?
Yes.
And you know that because?
You said I wouldn't have an answer, and I gave you an answer. I don't know if it's the right answer or not, but I gave you an answer. I assume it was not a natural spring. My assumption is it was not a natural spring that would have continued, but that it was a special spring that God did for this occasion. But that's just my assumption. Just my assumption.